Tape 4, side 2. So you were just saying something about Colonel Zanson, later General Zanson.
Yeah, I think General Zanson was removed unjustly, or demoted unjustly.
Mm-hmm.
I think very highly of him.
Mm-hmm. Now, I've just heard a story about that from his daughters, the one or two things that they didn't, they heard of or said they knew or heard from him later. One is, of course, books assert that Zanson was removed because the SS declared him unreliable politically, or, you know, that he was somehow a suspicious character or something. Do you know anything about the charges that were made against him at the time that seemed so unjust?
No.
Mm-hmm.
I only heard that he was removed.
Mm-hmm.
And I was shocked when I heard that. Because I think he was highly competent as a manager.
Mm-hmm.
He had good knowledge of engineering,
mm-hmm.
understanding. He saw through things when people wanted to cheat him.
Mm-hmm.
He noticed that and said it bluntly. And for this reason was disliked by many. But he had a right attitude, to my mind, by opening the cases where people were trying to cheat him,
mm-hmm.
and telling a big, beautiful stories where he knew it couldn't be that way. It could not be that good. While Stegmaier would even make it more beautiful,
mm-hmm.
and fool Dornberger.
Mm-hmm. So he had a good eye for when Stegmaier or other people were not being entirely honest,
right.
with what was really happening,
mm-hmm.
and you don't know nothing then about the background to why he was removed,
sure.
at all, because mm-hmm. you know his daughters tell me that you know he later said that there were disagreements between him and Dornberger at that time.
I doubt it.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think there were disagreements between Dornberger and Zanson. But the pressure on Dornberger might have been from the SS
mm-hmm.
so high that he could not protect Zanson anymore.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure that Dornberger would do anything to protect Zanson.
Mm-hmm.
They were real buddies.
Mm-hmm. Very close friends. Mm-hmm. Because there's a, you know, and this is a very hard story to verify, you know, they say that later in life that Zanson said that there were disagreements between him and Dornberger over the SS role, you know, that Dornberger felt that it was okay to have a bigger SS role, that's hard, very hard to verify, and one of the problems I have with it is that Dornberger was an army man, and and obviously there were problems. The SS was a rival in some ways to the army.
Yes, the SS was a rival.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I don't say that everything what the SS did was bad.
Mm-hmm.
For instance, the SS had in Poland, I think, research on jet engines
mm-hmm.
for the jet fighters. And I remember that they moved this equipment to the Middleberg underground to protect it.
Mm-hmm.
So they did good things. Of course, they played in so far a bad role than that Timmler tried to grab everything
mm-hmm.
and make everything subject to his thinking, his ideas.
Mm-hmm. And they had a massive concentration camp system that they used.
Yeah, undoubtedly.
Okay. Now, I had a question about the labor force and the construction and so forth. I gather from this book and that you had nothing much to do with the prisoners of war at the Trossenheide camp.
Nothing.
That they were employed by whom? The construction groups?
Yeah, I think so. I'm not sure at all. I had nothing to do with prisoners.
Mm-hmm.
Pardon me, I have to correct that.
Mm-hmm.
Don Baker shoot me out because in this woodworking plant,
mm-hmm.
there was a tremendous pile of scrap wood lying there,
mm-hmm.
Not orderly stacked up.
Mm-hmm.
And Don Baker shoot me out because of that. And he said in an orderly run shop, the wood, the scrap wood has been to be stapled orderly. And I said, Don Baker, this is of secondary importance. First, you want the work done.
Mm-hmm.
And if the scrap wood is piled not orderly, that is of secondary importance.
Mm-hmm.
But if you want to have it stapled orderly, then get me some more help.
Mm-hmm.
And he got me prisoners,
mm-hmm.
Russian prisoners.
Mm-hmm.
And one day they arrived there. And then after a few days, I went there and looked what they did. And this is now interesting. So it was just lunchtime.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a big barrel full of soup. And of course the thin stuff was on top and the heavy stuff, the thick stuff on the bottom.
Mm-hmm.
So each one of the prisoners, maybe 15 of them, got one
ladle
full of thin stuff.
Mm-hmm.
They ate that. And then they got the middle thick, and then they got the thick.
Mm-hmm.
And so finally the stuff was gone, all eaten up. And then this guy who did the ladling, he started now working again, and he took a 2x4.
Mm-hmm.
But it wasn't really a 2x4, it was a much thinner.
Mm-hmm.
And he put it on his shoulder, and then he walked this way.
Very short steps, okay? Very short, uncertain steps. Okay, you want to watch, the microphone will fall off.
Oh,
yeah.
Yeah.
That indicating what? That he was very weak?
Very, very slow. He was not weak.
Mm-hmm.
These guys were well fed.
Mm.
There was not probably much meat in that barrel.
Well.
But still, they were well fed and looked healthy. And I addressed this fellow, and he spoke German fluently. And I said, no. You got fed, and I think you don't have to complain about the food. And I think he said, no, he didn't complain about the food. And I say, I think you should walk faster.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, but I won't walk faster.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, if you Germans think you have won the war.
Mm-hmm.
And this was at a time when on the Eastern Front the German armies captured 300,000 one day, and the next week another 300,000 Russians.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, if you think you Germans have won the war, you are dead wrong. You will lose it.
Mm-hmm.
We communists will win it.
Mm-hmm.
Imagine.
Mm-hmm.
At that time, he was so convinced that the communists would win, and they won.
Mm-hmm. The so the prisoner of war camp, or the labor camp, was totally developed for construction,
well,
clearing.
For the Trossenheide, I don't even think that Trossenheide was a mm-hmm. prisoner of war camp. There was a labor camp there.
A labor camp.
And this were volunteers who mm-hmm. were there.
Mm-hmm.
And Frank. The Russians I was talking about were not in that camp.
Mm-hmm.
They were in a separate camp.
Mm-hmm. So you had, but all of this was outside your organization. This was
yes.
in somebody. You see, because it doesn't seem like they must have played much of a role at Entwicklungswerk either.
No.
So there must have been construction mostly.
Yeah, I think so. If there were häftlinge or prisoners out of a concentration camp, then they were probably employed by construction. Not in my plants.
But in building the plants there?
Yeah,
that you, in building your, clearing your spaces and putting in the putting up the buildings.
Yeah, that could very well be.
You didn't have any direct control over that.
None at all.
You handed over the plans to somebody.
No.
You handed the
plans. I didn't even see them. I didn't see any people in striped suits in Peenemünde. But I was told later on, even by visitors who came to see me here, that they knew they were there and they saw him. And I did not see him. Now, I did not walk every day through the whole area where the construction was going on. I went maybe there once every week, and then I didn't see any.
Your office was where? Was it separate from...
Yeah, my office was first, of course, in Werk Ost, and then in the buildings of the Baugruppe Schlemp, and then in the separate barracks, especially built for my staff.
That was, again, south of the... Was that south of where the factory buildings or the pre-production facility was going?
No, that was just south of the development laboratories.
Just south.
And then after the big buildings in south were being built, there was also a big administrative building. And they moved into that. And that was about 4 weeks before the raid.
So that was just finished, and then the administrative building was in the neighborhood of the factory buildings that were built. Okay, we have to stop pretty soon, so let me just think of what important questions there are left. One probably small point, as far as the production line was concerned, this was not a conveyor assembly line kind of production. This was stationary, horizontal construction, right? Aircraft, sort of like aircraft.
Right. Now, there were ideas of having a C-circular assembly line, where first on carriages were put the midsection, then the engine attached, and then the forward and so on. That was, but it was not ready. Maybe in another 4 weeks it would have been, so that we would really be able to start that if we had the parts.
Are you talking then about some kind of moving conveyor or
no,
cars?
You could call it a conveyor because there were tracks.
Okay, so that the car that would be mounted on some kind of car.
Yes.
And the car would be rolled or pulled.
Right. The car would be rolled. In a certain tact.
Right.
I see every 20 minutes, one step.
Right, okay. So that was, in fact, a kind of simple assembly line factory, you know, sort of auto factory, although obviously much less, much can't go nearly as fast because it's much more complicated than a car.
Much more complicated.
But it wasn't kind of an assembly line thing where it would be moved up at regular intervals from station to station.
Yes.
And you would feed in the parts from various part shops that existed along.
There were these part shops, and then you had sub-assembly lines. So, for instance, the engine was assembled, the engine or the tripwerk in an assembly sub-assembly line. So you would have a little carriage, and on that you put the combustion chamber. And then you got all the pipes, and when that was completed, and there was an important part, the steam generator.
For turning the turbo pumps.
Of the turbo pumps who sucked the drive stuff out of the tanks.
Mm-hmm.
And that was then transported to the main line and attached.
Right. So you would have a engine subassembly, you know, complete propulsion system, really, not including all of the hydrogen peroxide steam generator and everything. You'd have this. They'd have that as subassembly. You'd have a tail subassembly or something.
Correct.
Mm-hmm. And tanks.
And then the forward and the generator arm had a subassembly.
Mm-hmm. Instrument section.
Mm-hmm.
Now I know that at earlier points that Luftschiffbau Zeppelin had been involved in building tanks.
Yes.
Were you going to import those tanks? Were you going to bring those tanks in from Friedrichshafen?
Yes.
Or were you,
we got them from Friedrichshafen.
Mm-hmm.
We did not produce anything on the ground.
Mm-hmm.
And not, of course, in Peenemünde.
Mm-hmm.
Since this was well established, worked very well after tremendous difficulties in the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
These people did so well that there was no real need to change that.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know whether Luftschiffbau Zeppelin was the only factory, because the development fellows, in anticipation of production, had of course some good thoughts too.
Mm-hmm.
They had to establish three producers of the tanks, the combustion chambers, the turbo pumps, and so on and so on.
Mm-hmm. At what time did they start talking about adding on other factories, including, I know they first was going to be Luftschiffbau Zeppelin for final assembly, in addition to the Versuchsserien. That was a spare idea, right?
Before the air raid on Peenemünde, of course, Speer and Dornbeil and others worried about the air raid.
Mm-hmm.
And so the idea was to establish Luftschiffbau Zeppelin as an additional assembly plant, and also Rachsberger near Wiener Neustadt in Ost Austria. So there would be three assembly plants, Peenemünde, Luftschiffbau Zeppelin, and Rachsberger.
Mm-hmm.
But at about the same time, or shortly before, Peenemünde was bombed, also Luftschiffbau Zeppelin was bombed, or at least badly damaged by deep flying attack planes.
Mm-hmm.
And the same happened at Wiener Neustadt. The details I don't know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I know of those raids. And in fact, they were not because they knew anything about the connection to A4, but the Allies saw them as aircraft production facilities, so they launched air raids against them for that reason. But that idea came up in 42 or 43 of having these extra factories added on. When you went from only one large building to from three large buildings on the original plan to only building one, were you still holding to the 300 a month in one building?
Well, let me put it
as a hope, as a goal, let's say.
As a goal, the 300 were demanded out of Peenemünde.
Mm-hmm.
Out of three buildings.
Mm-hmm.
Now, two were cancelled because of lack of steel and concrete,
mm-hmm.
so we had to be satisfied with one. Now, let's see what can be done in one.
Mm-hmm.
You see, since we now went from riveting ideas to truly welding, with welding machines, spot welding, seam welding, worked very well.
Mm-hmm.
So that saved a lot of space.
Mm-hmm.
And so maybe in one building we could not make 300 but 200.
Mm-hmm.
And since these figures were floating anyway, from 900 to 1800 or 2000 a month, so this was in fact wide open.
Mm-hmm.
The top figure, however, was not so wide open. The silly guy, Sauer, demanded 2000.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's about as high as it went, but you felt that at the time, just before the air raid came and made all of this change, that you might get 200 or something like that out of it.
Mm-hmm.
That was what you felt was a realistic figure. at that time, no, 200 or 300?
Yeah, later on in production, of course, the bottleneck was the so-called Ruder machine, mm-hmm. the servo motor, mm-hmm. that moved the Strahlruder,
mm-hmm. jet rudders,
in the exhaust.
Mm-hmm.
If we made 900 missiles underground, that meant 3,600 Ruder machine.
Yeah.
That's quite a demand.
Mm-hmm.
Now, this damn thing was full of problems. Full of problems. Unbelievable. And was a continued headache. And it would have stopped the production of the V-2 if the war end had not stopped it.
Mm-hmm. Okay, now I don't want to hold you much longer. So I just want to see if there's anything else that, and if there's anything else you want to say about the Farzouk Sarai and Vak period that...
I can't think in a moment of anything else.
Because I may be a long time before I ever get an opportunity to follow this up. I'm sure another questions will occur to me later on. But and perhaps I could write you a letter if something comes up
if you write me a letter, and then leave space so I can write my answers in.
Okay.
That what makes it much easier for me, mm-hmm. than if I repeat your question and then write the answer in time.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Okay.
So like I did in my first reply to you,
mm-hmm. use the letter.
Mm-hmm. My answer on the letter.
That makes a lot of sense. It saves effort on your part. Well, thank you very much. It was enormously helpful as far as straightening out the story.
I wanted to do it today because now my machinery worked mm-hmm. well mm-hmm. in remembering.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe tomorrow it wouldn't
work. You'd have a bad day for memory. Huh?
Yeah.
Well, your memory seemed very good. Thank you.